It's Thursday, September 20th, 2012, and you're listening to episode 277 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 57 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
This is Wayne.
And this is Johan.
And getting right
in. This is the guy who hasn't been on the mic for 5 months.
Damn, I tried to cut you off and it didn't work. Try to roll right over you. All right. First off, just real quick note here in case you have forgotten in the past week.
Chris is old.
Oh, thank you.
And we are also still doing the postcards contest. I won't belabor that, but I will just note that there's a link to the details in the show notes. Definitely get your postcards in. All righty, Chris, you had a shout out you wanted to do, so go ahead.
I do have a shout out. I got an email from one of our listeners in Sweden. I don't know what his form handle is, but his real name is Joachim. I mean, he said he wanted to send me a gift, and once I established that this was not something I needed to be really too worried about, he sent me a small little package. And inside this...
Chris, just so I can help you out right here. There are two possible pronunciations of that name, depending on exactly where
this
it comes
from. Mihao guy.
Yes, from the Mihao guy.
Okay.
And Mihao really is the Polish pronunciation. It is either Joachim or Joachim.
No, it's Joachim. Because I asked him, I said, I want to do a shout out. Right. How do I pronounce your name? And he sent me an email with proper links to
this
it.
May be the first and last time you ever hear this, but thank you for your contribution. Because John tried to take me to the mat one day saying the only possible pronunciation of that name is Joachim. And I'm like, that is not the case. There is also something that in certain parts of Eurasia, it is pronounced Joachim. And he's like, no, it's not. I'm like, yes, it is. So
no, it
thank
is.
You, Chris. And thank you, Swedish person as well, for this.
Glad to see you're fired up about the important man.
But anyway, so inside this was a tiny little dice bag, a little like tan colored dice bag, and it was from Australia. So, okay, whatever. It's from Australia, from a guy from Sweden. But he wrote a rather extensive letter kind of explaining what this is. And he had heard all the tales about Buffalo Scrotum, the whole Buffalo Scrotum dice bag thing. So he said he had actually searched far and wide to try and find a moose scrotum, but he couldn't find one, so he settled for this. And what it is, it's a small little dice pouch. I mean, it's very small, and it's actually a kangaroo scrotum dice pouch. And it's very smooth. It's hairless. It's really nice, actually. He says they're quite popular
important.
In Australia.
And Joachim, for future reference, when searching for moose scrotum, the best place to look is on a moose. You'll have about 50% odds of success.
Well, granted, he wasn't traipsing, you know, around Sweden to try and find this. So, but inside, though, and this is the part I think I appreciate the most, inside the little dice pouch was 3d20. On the letter he wrote, I really hope that you appreciate the symbolism of what these 3d20 mean, which I immediately got right away. Of course, he was making reference to Master Three Balls.
I think he was implying that you were 60, Chris, which obviously he was
implying
underestimating.
That I was 60? Oh, sure.
But
yeah, that could be. As long as they're not exploding D20s.
3D20 millennia.
Dan, years ago, when you were coming up with this concept of Fear the Boot, and you were at that intersection of Visa Gold and Bad Judgment, did you ever think that you would be running the podcast of Animal Scrotums?
No. Chris was not in the thinking anywhere. Actually, how Fear the Boot came to be and where it's gone and how it's evolved and whatnot is a topic that I sometimes will diatribe about at length at Fear the Con, but I don't think I've ever given like a really lengthy, like, this is where we came from, but a lot of things changed from where I pictured Fear the Boot starting, including the fact that the original lineup of Fear the Boot was like on a whopping one episode. But no, I never pictured, quite frankly, Chris or Dice Grooms or any of that sort of thing.
I do have to say a very, very, very big thank you to Joachim for that. I mean, it's once again proves we clearly have the best listeners. So now I never actually thought that I would actually have an actual Buffalo Scrotum dice container. Thank you, Mikey Mason. And now I have a kangaroo one to match. So I'm becoming in a lot of ways, maybe like the Noah of Animal Scrotum dice bag.
By the time Fear the Boot ends its run, how many scrotums will Chris have acquired?
Well, and if he wants to be Noah, doesn't he have to have 2x2, so doesn't he have to have a scrotum and then like an uterus or something?
Some sort of egg sac or something?
Yeah, thank you, Chris.
That would just take up space, and we know Chris loves his scrotums.
I do.
You know, thank you. This has been Fear the Boot. Tune in next week.
You know what's funny?
I'm going to go drink some bleach now.
A little banter topic here. Someone on the forums asked the question, if we could pick one person out of the community to add to our gaming group, who would it be? And it's an interesting question.
Anyone but Chris.
We decided not to take that question directly because of the fact that the answer to this is really there are many people. And if I had to pick one, then I would feel like I'd be hurting someone through omission, you know, by...
No, mine would be Ogre Teeth.
By whoever...
I don't care about what anybody else
Well, does, so. Then we came up with a counter idea, which is we could make people feel better about it. Each of us, in turn, picks a person, and then everybody else insults that choice. So by being picked, you can feel good about yourself. By being not picked, you can also feel good about yourself. Then that evolved into, well, who is it you would want to add to your gaming group?
Well, what...
Like a type of person.
Yeah, what are the attributes of... The perfect gamer.
If you look at your gaming group right
now. If you could go into your laboratory that you keep in your basement.
Yes.
And you can create the ultimate player. Not even ultimate player. I'm talking the ultimate GM. And you have all your vials of attentive listener and the vial of good GMing habits and all this sort of stuff. What vials would you add into that noxious mixture to make your gamer clone?
Well, the answer that's barely legal and untouched by Chris, but which is why the angle I was thinking of taking it from is not quite who would my perfect person be, but rather what do I feel would be a supplement to the gaming group. The example that I used, Chad, I actually asked you a different question and answering it, I think you answered this question about the gaming group for me, which is like, think of it kind of like, wow, you're standing around with four people and you're like, man, we really need a healer, or we really need a rogue to get past this encounter. And in the same way, what do I feel like our current gaming group or either of my gaming groups is missing? The type of person I would really want to be there. And your answer for WoW, I think, is my answer for our gaming group.
So my answer for when I used to play World of Warcraft, I haven't played in a long time, an unemployed person, because there were a couple of unemployed people in our guild, and they were great because they were always around.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the main thing when you play World of Warcraft, like regularly, and you do group type stuff, is availability of the player. And if this person doesn't have to work, doesn't care, and can stay up real late at night and doing stuff, they're always around. They got nowhere to be. It's great.
And I think that is similar to what I would say for a role-playing game, because as I think about my two role-playing groups, I can't really think of anything that's really missing. Both groups have people that are willing to GM. Both groups have people that are willing to play. Both groups have the straight person and the comedic person. Both groups have people that are deep into RP and a little bit more willing to handle the crunch. You know, there's a pretty good balance of personality traits and skills in both groups. But I think the one thing that is missing from both groups that I wish I had more of, and quite frankly, this is a life thing in general, is
unemployed friends.
Exactly. People that are more available, or at least somebody who kept a night schedule like I do. Because I cannot tell you how many times lately I have been sitting there at like 11 or midnight, and I'm an absolute night owl. Sure. Now that I'm back self-employed again, I work much more flexible hours. And I'm feeling, I don't know, really depressed, or I just want to talk about something. Or maybe I'm just feeling stir crazy and I want to go out and grab a drink. There is nobody I can call.
I used to work a third shift job because I'm a night owl. I love staying up late. You work in the service industry and you work a third shift job. No, there's no customers to bother you. So the problem with it is, at least for me, is I'm a very social person. And so on my day off, I would go out with my friends and we'd party and we'd do all this stuff. And then around 11 o'clock, midnight, every single one of them was like, oh, I got to go to bed.
Yeah.
Get up. You know, don't want to piss the wife off. Got to get up and go to work tomorrow. And then one by one, they would leave. And then I'd be alone and it would be midnight and I don't go to bed for 7 hours. Well, I mean, okay, so you'll watch a couple of movies and a little TV. Okay, now it's 3 a.m. and I go to bed at 7 a.m. What do you do?
I'm not quite that far off. I tend to go to bed about 3 or 4.
Right.
But I would still love to be able, like 11:30 at night, call somebody and say, hey, I really need to get out of here. Let's go grab a beer somewhere. And they're cool with hanging out to like 2 a.m. or something like that. And as of right now, I do not have any friends that are on that type of a impromptu night schedule.
Hey, man.
You can always swing by my house and chill, Dan.
How far away do you live?
Swing on the side at 11 and arrive. Yeah. They'll be like swinging by Chris's place. I'll decide at 11, and by the time I get there, he'll be out in his front lawn.
I'm heading off to
naked,
work.
Getting his morning paper.
See, that's just what you get for wanting to be social. If you just become an introvert and lock yourself away like I do, not a problem.
Wait, that's the funny thing.
Except I'm normal.
That's the funny thing, is I have a 28-hour cycle. I am like that throughout most of the day. And then I just have these randoms like, I got to go out here to see somebody. And most of the day, I'm like that. I don't want to be around a damn person. But then something hits. It's like, man, I just got to go see somebody. And of course, invariably, it always happens at like midnight. It's like, well, I've got tons of people that would go out if it was 6 hours earlier.
Yeah.
As of
or a Friday.
Yeah. Or, well, sometimes not even that.
Hey, dude, 3-day weekend. How late did I stay up with you playing Total War?
Okay. Fair enough.
2 days.
Fair enough. Yeah. All right. So
I get those strange, you know, urges to run out and do something late at night. I mean, my gym membership, almost every time I go to the gym, it's like 11:30, midnight, sometimes 1 a.m. when I run to the gym. Jeez. Because it's just, that's when I feel like I want to go for some reason. I don't know why, but.
All right. So what about you guys? Well, what is it that you would want to add to your gaming group?
To the gaming Frankenstein.
Somebody who's willing to play the healer.
Really? Are you serious or just being facetious?
I'm mostly being facetious, but there's a little bit of seriousness to that. I mean, yeah, if we play any sort of crunchy dungeon crawly sort of thing, nobody ever wants to play the healer.
Are you kidding me? That is my first choice. I love playing
the healer. You are by far the exception.
I like being. I like doing healer.
I tell you, in almost everything I play, whether it's tabletop games or MMOs, if all things are equal and it just comes down to pick a class, pick a role, I will always go for the healer. Always.
Following the cleric grenade.
Yeah, I love it. It's not a grenade, dude. The cleric is freaking awesome. I love playing healers. It's what I played in Apocalypse World. That's what I play in most MMOs. That's what I play in, well, in D&D, my more recent characters haven't been healers, but
I would like to clarify, in Apocalypse World, you did not play a healer, sir.
I couldn't roll the damn dice. I tried. It wasn't for lack of trying.
He said he played a healer. He didn't say he played an effective one.
I played a... What's funny
is you could ask him how many people he healed in the course of the game.
Yet every other role I did, I shot people. Every bluff roll was a just grand slam success. But every time it came to roll for healing, it was like, oh, negative 14, and that's not even possible. But somehow that's what I rolled.
You wounded them more.
I did. I did. All every jokes aside, time. I injured people worse. I was like...
As a true healer should.
I was Dr. Kevorkian.
Pick the guy that has, like, the true gaming pad. And I've almost got that with their current group. But he's the guy who either has a significant other that doesn't care, or he lives by himself. And he's got the nice table set up. And he has the huge-ass gaming collection that you can just, you know, spend all kinds of time staring at and wishing you could play some of these games, but you never do. One of the guys in our current group, Brad, he's very, very close to that. He's got a ton of board games, but his RPG collection necessarily isn't that extensive, but his board games are just fun to look at, just to look at those games, because there's, and we did have a guy like that once in my old group, and he would go and he would buy almost every new RPG product that came out, knowing he would never play these things, but he would buy them, stick them up on his collection of bookshelves just to have them in his collection. And they were just fun to look through and look at. And that guy, because he always has just neat stuff to see, stuff that you'll know that you'll never have.
I was thinking, that sounds really awful. And the reason I was thinking that was it has nothing to do with rules or role-playing game books. It's because earlier tonight we were talking about moving books and packing books and how heavy books are.
Well, Chris said he went out somebody else.
Somebody else. But no, it's a friend. So Chris will get called because Chris is a really in shape guy, right? So Chris is going to get called. Just like I'm out of shape, but I get called because I got the truck. So, yeah. You know,
that's why I call
it. That's why I don't own a truck.
It was like that for me when I moved. You know, I have a number of bins that had nothing but, you know, my collection of Battletech novels or all of the Battletech source. I have like everything that was ever published for Earthdawn, and that is pretty heavy after a while.
Were there more than like 3 books ever published for Earthdawn?
Oh my gosh, are you kidding? There's a ton of books. Honestly, that would be one of my top 3 Desert Island games. That game is a blast and a half to play. It's an awesome game.
Actually, there were only 2 books published. Chris bought a pallet of each book because he has a byline in them. So
that makes sense.
Yeah. Chris, do you have a byline in them as like a playtester or something like that?
For Earth Dawn, no. The only thing I ever did for Earth Dawn was, I think I got something published in like a third party, the Earth Dawn Journal magazine, but never for the game itself. I love playing the game. The game was great, but no, nothing for that. Just Shadowrun and BattleTech.
Yeah, I've never actually played it. We played the setting once, but the guy I was running it wanted to use a different rule set. So I've never actually played straight out of the box Earth Dawn. Yeah,
that's okay. Even though he doesn't have a byline for Earth Dawn, he has a byline for Earth for helping to test that when it was being made.
That's true.
Well, I was back around in the fourth world where this takes place. So
all of the rhetorical questions in the Book of Job are answered with Chris.
So my perfect game group member person.
Yeah.
Be somebody who, first and foremost, is a GM and a player who can do both equally well.
Okay.
Because I like the idea of having multiple people in a group who can run games and play games. It just works out better for everyone.
Right.
It would be somebody who has hobbies outside of gaming, so you could have a conversation with them.
I agree. I think for me, the issue goes back to the timing.
Yeah.
Most of the people I associate with, in fact, I say all the people associate with, I can talk to about something else other than just gaming. Sure. But they're
but
never
not
there
at
to talk.
3 o'clock in the
but
morning.
But I want to, yeah. When I need to talk, they're never there for me.
I would add in a healthy dose of grooming habits, but
that's never been
a problem. But I have gone to cons and I have walked into the gaming room and been hit right in the face with the funk.
It's been a problem in some of my groups going way back. It has not been a problem in any of my groups within the past decade.
I've heard multiple stories from multiple different unrelated people about multiple different unrelated cat piss guy. So,
well,
I think
part of the big difference is these groups are all made of professionals. Yeah, they have to be able to get along in a work environment, and you can't be that guy.
Actually, you are correct. And in fact, thinking back to the people I had who had hygiene problems,
they were unemployed.
They were unemployed or quote unquote underemployed, with one exception. And it was that one exception I never understood, because he did have a professional job and yet still had terrible hygiene. But anyway.
So what we got? We got GM and player, both good.
Right.
GM and player.
Diversity of interest.
Diversity of interest. And, you know, they are a nice person.
Yeah.
You want to be able to get along with them, but you don't want a complete wilting flower or kiss ass or anything like that. I think that I would want an assertive player in my group. I think that it helps if you have a couple of assertive players instead of just me being assertive all the time and hogging the spotlight. What else?
You're trying to think of all the reasons I gave you for people who I was suggesting on the drive over. That's what you're doing, because you're listing them all off.
A diversity of gaming interests. That was one that you put out that I thought was good.
Now, there's like,
somebody who likes story games and crunchy games. And
there's one that I think I could say about
willingness to try something new.
Bingo. Yeah. If I look at any one person that I game with, I wouldn't say that there's any one of them who is the party of no, who just vetoes everything. But it seems like once once you get through the filter of everyone, somebody along the line shot it down. Mm-hmm. And I really wish it was easier to just say, like, look, let's just try it. If it sucks, it sucks, and we'll play something else. But
let's do a one shot.
But at least try it. Give me a shot at this. And there are so many things I have never been able to run for any group, just because by the time it gets on the conveyor belt, one party has shot it down and was just a flat out, no, I won't do this. Or a no so strong that even say, well, I would do it. You know, they're not going to put their heart into it. And so it's not going to work.
That's why you also need somebody who can give their opinion or vote no, shoot something down, and they get outvoted. And they're still willing to go along with
it. And try their best and not be a dick about it. Yeah, Waynard, what about you?
I stole all of his ideas.
Chad did steal pretty much all of them.
One of his was people who are more assertive, so.
Yeah, Wayne.
Yeah, my own fault for giving the ideas of the car. I guess the only things he didn't hit on are people that actually are both available and reliable. So, you know, they will be able to show up each week.
Okay.
Or at least let you know, you know, a week or so in advance, hey, I'm not going to be able to make it next week. So you don't have to plan around them.
Unemployed or underemployed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Except with good hygiene of
Good hygiene, no family ties, yet for some reason not carrying all kinds of baggage because of that.
The big ones are really, like Chad, I want to see someone who's both willing to run and to play and who enjoys both. Anyone that just wants to do one or the other can end up causing a problem. Although it's less of a problem if someone only wants to play than it is someone only wanting to GM. But someone that wants to do both is the ideal situation. Someone willing to try just about anything. Someone willing to play varieties of games. The one thing I still haven't... Yeah, I played one horror game now, but I would like to have somebody in that is, you know, really into like a Call of Cthulhu type game, because I've never played in a campaign of that.
I have played in a small number of horror games. The one type of game I have never played, and I believe that is a correct statement. I can't just say never played where it was run well. I take that back. I did play in one. It was terrible. It is a detective style game.
Yeah,
we played in one, and that was the one with the DA awful. Who was going to press charges against the ghost.
And that had nothing to do with the genre.
Yeah, that was just the terrible GM. Failure, but I would love to play in a good detective game.
I don't think I can do a good detective
game. I don't think
game.
I can either.
I enjoy watching mysteries occasionally, but when I watch a mystery or a detective show, I'm along for the ride. I'm really not trying to figure it out. I'm just there for the ride.
I wouldn't say I'm a totally passive consumer of entertainment, right, but I'm with you in that one. I tend to watch
when you have an aha moment, you have an aha moment, but I'm not trying to predict.
It depends on the situation. Like for me, a Sherlock Holmes novel, I am looking for the answer as I go through. Mm-hmm. That's part of the enjoyment of the novel. But with a TV mystery, I tend to not get so hung up on that.
Our main topic for today is one that I almost shot down.
Pow.
Until
so ironic.
Until these guys pointed out that, well, maybe we can just do a live exercise on the show, because people seem to like it when we actually demonstrate the ideas instead of just talking about them. The idea that they put forth was, why don't we talk about pitching a game?
Yeah.
You know, so your group is between campaigns.
Not coming up with the idea of the game.
Right.
You have the idea. Now you're trying to sell that idea.
Or maybe a couple ideas.
No, a couple ideas.
Whatever. Yeah. But you're between games. You're on the GM seat next. You've got one or more ideas that you want to run. So how do you convince your group to play it?
Now, I've also done it from a different perspective, too, where there are multiple GMs. They each have an idea or two, and we're competing to be the GM.
Actually, you and I had that fairly recently with Star Trek versus D&D. Mm-hmm. We went D&D, and that's where Narwhal came from.
Yeah.
I originally said in our little host discussion area, I said, you know,
the super secret area.
Maybe I should drop out of this one because apparently I can't do it very well. Because
that's exactly why I should be on this one.
All of the games I've tried to pitch recently, as we talked about a couple episodes back, what I really get out of the games is the narrative I have in mind. Mm-hmm. So we may have ended up playing the title I suggested, but we were not playing the game I wanted to play. Now, Chad, you, however, seem to have much more success with this.
Well,
and John does as well, but John is busy with court or something tonight. Or
John and I, actually, we really wanted to like double team this topic, because both of us consider ourselves pretty decent salesmen because of our parents. John's mom is a pharmaceutical saleswoman.
Yeah.
Like sales quotas and charts and selling is about more than just pushing product. And, you know, there's the art of the sell. And my dad, and actually his current wife too, are salespeople. My dad was a food broker. He sold food to grocery stores, and his wife sells food to restaurants.
See, I like to think I'm a pretty good salesman, but mine didn't come from my parents at all. I did retail for 6 years. I was trained to be a salesman. Yeah. Well, I did it regularly.
Let's see. What I got from my youth,
how to play a musical instrument,
is an analytical mind, a creative mind, paranoia, and moral absolutes. I am the son of a music teacher and a nurse.
And a Sith, apparently.
I got a lot of free food. And you got a lot of free food from my childhood,
Let me explain my problem, and then I want to hear how you would solve this or how you would correct it.
Yeah. Channeling Billy Mays here.
Yeah. All right. So
don't yell like him.
No,
that's the first key, is to not yell.
When I pitch the ideas, usually I have a narrative I want to tell, mm-hmm. as I said a couple episodes back.
Define the narrative. As an example.
Okay, like, as an example, let me give you one for a D&D campaign, sure. which actually was one of the ideas that I pitched in our most recent round, and it got shot down.
I'm sorry about that.
It is okay. this is one that ended up becoming the very, very short-lived current Stonekeep game, which mm-hmm. I've considered dead on the vine, but maybe we'll resurrect it someday eventually. The plot being, okay, you guys work and live in an outpost town mm-hmm. that is kind of by the Standing Stone. It's a little haven north past December outside of Sembia and the Forgotten Realms. I kind of gave a setup to it. And I did the same thing with Battletech.
Let's take your Stonekeep game here for a second. Imagine you're trying to pitch this game to us. You lay it out. Now, I've seen you pitch games before. And what you do is you do exactly what you just said there, which is fine, which is great. You say, you know, this is what the game's about. This is kind of a little lead up. And you'd give a little bit more information than what you gave here, but that's fine for the example.
Right.
And you lay it out. And then when we start questioning it or another pitch is put up, you don't adapt the pitch, nor do you try to re-push the pitch. And here's one of the tactics you can do. So you do that pitch. You do what you just said to us. And what happens is we'll start asking questions. Well, so what are we? Are we like heroes and we took over this town? Are we nobles? Well, are we granted this?
Actually, in my experience, that's not usually where things mm-hmm. fall apart. It usually falls apart on the yes, but. Let's take Battletech as an example. Mm-hmm. I explained what the Silver Scorpions was a couple episodes back. I won't re-explain mm-hmm. it, but one of the core points of this is it involves the clans.
Yeah.
And when I pitched the idea, Chad, your response, I'm not picking on you.
Right, no.
Because everybody absolutely. Does this, but your response absolutely. Was, I don't want to play anything that involves the clans.
Yeah, I don't care for the clans.
Boom. That shoots down the entire narrative, because the narrative centers on the clans, shoots down the entire mm-hmm. narrative. If I pitch out I tried to pitch out Epoch Crisis. I said, I want you mm-hmm. guys to play some kind of military spec ops. This was several campaigns back.
Nobody wanted to play the military.
And there was like, we don't want to play military. We want to be freelancers. And then it was like, well, the entire story I had required some kind of a command infrastructure. It's all gone.
I've identified a couple of issues that we can work on. But let's pull it back. Let's pull it back to the pitch.
All right.
So you pitch that out, and everybody around the table has questions about it, right? Because we just don't know enough about it, so we have questions. So, like, my questions would be, it's like, are we playing nobles, and this is our lands that we've been granted, or are we heroes, are we just employees?
My question is, what happens at this town? What are the politics going on around here? What are the factions involved? Mm-hmm. I want to know more. That tells me what the city looks like, basically. But I didn't get anything from that about what will we be doing.
This is a good point for you here. Mm-hmm. Now for anyone, really. These questions just got asked, and answering them is not the important part. That seems counterintuitive. As answering these people's questions is not the important part. What you're doing is you're seeing what they're really interested in. What are the parts of your pitch that stand out to them and are interesting to them? So you look at my stuff, it's like, are we playing nobles? Are we playing heroes? Like, oh, well, Chad might be interested in playing some court politics, some noble stuff. Wayne, I forgot, what was yours?
Basically, what are the factions around here? And what are we going to be doing?
Well, exactly. And Wayne wants to know kind of like what he wants, a plot. He wants maybe factions, narrative. And you start thinking, it's like, okay, this is what these people are interested in. And so you kind of take a step back and you say, okay, in my setting, I have court politics, but wasn't really going to be a main part. I can kind of sell that up more and then make that a greater part of the game when I run that. And then the factions, like, oh yeah, you know what? I've got a lot of factions, but I wasn't going to put that as part of the pitch because I didn't want to go through, well, there's this faction, it'd be too boring. But you know what? Maybe that isn't boring. Maybe that's something I can hook them with.
Let me give you the start
pitching those to them.
Let me see, and I get that. I get mm-hmm. the idea of adapting, and definitely that is...
Well, and not so much adapting, changing your idea, but,
but
bringing up the parts...
Overcoming resistance or whatever the heck it's called in sales. I've never worked in sales, but I did briefly work in a marketing department. I was
you accentuate
guy.
The positive, you kind of downplay blah, blah, the blah. Negative. And
I was Direct Marketing Association certified for a short while, even though I've never actually been a marketer. But the point being, though, I get that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's an important point.
Yes.
I don't want to belittle that point because I think that is an important point of you have to help people understand this is where you fit into it. This is how you will get what you want out of this campaign. And I think for a lot of people, that might be their issue. And so it's very worth hitting on.
Mm-hmm.
But let me recount as best as I can my most recent shot at pitching a game. Mm-hmm. And there were three games I pitched. I'll list the games out and describe them briefly and recite back to the best of my recollection how they each got shot down. Right. One was the Stonekeep game. The immediate response to that was, I don't want to play fantasy. Mm-hmm. There's no way to adapt to this or play or play down things to change the fact that Forgotten Realms is fantasy. Point two was an Apocrisis game where you guys were somehow
I don't want to play sci-fi.
Well, it was, I don't want to play anything that's part of a command structure. I don't want anyone telling me what to do. I want to be independent. And it didn't come from anyone at the table, but I'm not.
Sure.
I'm not going to bully.
You're protecting the innocent.
I'm protecting the innocent. And so that whole thing got shot down. The third one was Battletech. You, Chad, said, I don't play with clans.
Yeah.
Once again, well, there's no way I can play up a campaign that centers on resistance to clans and say, oh, well, the clans won't really be there because, no, they're going to be there. I don't see how playing up or down certain aspects would have sold of those campaigns.
Let's go.
I think for me, the first thing I would do with the last one, because the last one's the easiest one to start addressing.
Okay.
I would start off with a question for Chad. Mm-hmm. What is it about the clans that you dislike? What is it you are afraid would happen in a game with the clans? Why do you not want the clans in there?
Which I already have a pretty good idea of the answer because he and I have had this discussion in the past. Right. There's a change in feel to the game. There's a jump in technology. The culture doesn't feel the same because mechs become a little bit more disposable. Mm-hmm. The clan mechs in general, you don't have any really in-character reason not to try and start taking them. And once you start taking them, now suddenly it's not using your mech to its strengths. You just change the mech to do whatever the hell you want it to do.
There was a power creep. Clans came, and then it was a power jump.
I get what his objections would be, and I can't even say I disagree with them, except insofar as saying I think you can still tell a good story anyway.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. I think you can tell a good story in Shadowrun. Right. I've played good Shadowrun games. I still don't like Shadowrun.
Right. So I'm curious. Okay, so how do I...
There's two angles to approach that. One, you could pull it back to yourself of saying, maybe I created too much of a concept for a pitch. Maybe I should have had a more basic pitch and less internal concept. But that's a lesson for a different day. You know, I mean, it's like you're already there. You already made the pitch. It already got shot down, so to speak. Yeah.
Well, and the difference is for you and me, that would work well.
Yeah.
For what Dan wants out of a game, that doesn't work for him.
Yeah, because it's the narrative is what I'm after.
And that's fine. Right. I mean, but what I'm saying is that in the future, like after that and after games, then it's like, okay, well, I'm going to go to, we have another pitch session. I'm going to go into that. Come with less. Again, this sounds a little counterintuitive, but show up to the table with a little bit less and say, okay, I'm thinking about running fantasy and I've got some ideas brewing about X, Y, and Z, but X, Y, and Z is not really specific. It's not A, B, and C. A, B, and C is Forgotten Realms, and we're playing in this land, and you're going to be these characters. X, Y, Z is more, I got some ideas for some bad guys. I kind of got a general feel. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
You come with a little bit less to the pitch. The other alternative, I went to a technical college. And when I went to this technical college, I got a bachelor's degree. And to get a bachelor's degree, you can't just take technical classes. You have to take things like in a normal class, like you're studying psychology, you still have to take English. And how a technical college gets around that is that they have business English and they have business math, how to write a resume, how to interview, how to do all that kind of crap, how to have meetings, things like that. So one of them was like that. We had to come up with a sales pitch. So me and the whole class, but specifically me and this other guy were sitting across from each other from this table. And the whole class was around us. This other dude, really great guy, very large individual who really liked food. I'm not criticizing. I have a bit of a gut myself. I really like to eat. And especially back then, I was very overweight and I really like to eat. So this other guy, this third fellow, has to do his pitch and he's pitching a restaurant. This restaurant business idea, and we are the quote-unquote investors. It was during the whole no-carb craze.
Okay.
And so he starts pitching this idea, and we mishear him. He is pitching an idea for a restaurant called No Carbo. We thought he was pitching O-Carbo.
O-Carbo.
And so we start talking. We get really excited because we're like fat kids who like to eat, right? And so we're like, oh my God, and the place serves all pasta and there's like unlimited bread and it's just like all ice cream and cheesecake. This is the best restaurant ever. And it's just like all carb-loaded dishes. And then we're like getting really excited. The thing is, he's pitching to us and we're the ones who are approving his idea. We are the quote-unquote investors. And we're getting really pumped up about this O-Carbo idea. And then he's like, no, 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 guys. It's not O-Carbo. It's no carbo. It is a low-carb, low-fat restaurant that serves things like fish and steamed vegetables. And we're like, oh. And then we kind of look away. And then the teacher was like, why didn't you adapt your idea? You had them. You had the $1 million check. The angel investors were there. They were going to write the check and sell it. And you were done. You were golden. You just had to change your idea completely. I'm not saying that's the way to go. But if you are comfortable with that, and that's this isn't even a on-the-fly, off-the-cuff GM thing. It's changing your idea radically. If you are comfortable with changing your idea radically, and this is just one tactic for when your idea gets shot down, you listen to why they shot it down. We'll use the example from me. I'm running a Klan campaign. I don't like Klans. Boom, shoots that turkey down. Then you kind of like, oh, Klans? We don't need to do the Klans. We can do this. And then you rejigger the idea and resell it. Not a whole lot of people are comfortable with that. I can do it. I'm comfortable with that. Yes, but that's not... And I'm just doing that as an example.
Right.
So
one thing to that, though, Chad, while I don't disagree with that approach at all, because I do think that that has definite merits to it, there becomes a threshold on the other end of the spectrum where when you're redoing your pitch, you get to a point where you're not happy with the idea.
Bingo.
And so you have to be mindful of that as well.
That's very, very important.
Bingo.
Even... if you do a sort of yes, but, or you do realignment of your ideas and stuff, if you change the sell to something you're not comfortable, I mean, that's the thing about salesmanship, right? The better salesman is someone who believes in what they're selling. If you don't believe in what you're selling, if you don't like what you're selling, you should try and sell something else.
I think I have a different problem, which is I believe in what I'm selling.
Well, and I'm saying if you change it, you suddenly don't believe in what you're selling.
Right. Precisely. Yeah. Yes, yes. And you're exactly right. I think it's more the fact that I don't like the process of trying to sell it.
Right.
I walk in and basically say, look, I want people to trust me and say, I've been GMing for a long time. I've had some lemons, but I've also had some really kick-ass campaigns. I've got an idea. If you guys just trust me,
well,
chances are you will get a great campaign out of this.
Here's what you can do on that. So we talked about realigning the ideas and how there could be a lot of people who aren't comfortable with that idea, but there could be some who are open to it and fine with it. But let's say you're not comfortable with it. You're not comfortable. The core concept of your idea gets shot down. You ask, like what Wayne says, you ask him a question. Why don't you like that? What don't you like about that? The key here is not to gather information for a debate, because you will win the debate yet lose the sale. You know, it's like, well, I don't like how the factions change, and I don't like how the technology creep happens, and I don't like this. And then you could come at them, and it's just like, well, this idea you have that the technology creep, it's not that bad for these mathematical reasons, and this is basically you're saying, this is how you're wrong, this is how you're wrong, and this is how you're wrong.
Yeah, that's
and
then, not the purpose of asking.
And then
the
I would
purpose
look at,
of asking is to understand.
Yeah, and then I would look at you and go, Dan, you're absolutely right. I am not playing in your game.
let me ask you, though, a very practical and blunt question. How could I have changed my Silver Scorpion sales pitch to get you on board?
Okay.
What would I have said differently when you say, no Klans? What do I reply with?
Let's do some role play.
That gets you in the campaign.
Let's do some role playing.
Okay.
You're me.
Okay.
You are so lucky. You get to be me. So, and I'm going to be you. And I've just pitched this Silver Scorpions game. And I say, okay, we're playing Silver Scorpions. Got this idea. Dan, what do you think? Chad, what do you think?
And, okay, Chad says, I don't play anything involves Klans.
Yeah. And I would be like, fair enough. I understand. Let me ask you, what knows why, but I would ask you, you know, well, why don't you like the Klans? And then you would say, you know, all the things we talked
about. Technology creep, the change of the culture, blah, blah, blah.
And I go, you know what? I understand what you're saying. And you know me, Dan. You know me, Chad. I agree with what you're saying. I think I can make it work for you. I identify... You know, and maybe you don't use these sort of HR PC terms, but, you know, it's like, I can identify what bothers you about this. And I agree with what you're saying. And I'm on your team. I'm on your side in this argument. But I think if you and I work together on this, we can totally make this work.
Would that have worked? And I'm asking for
if you use the PC HR bull terms? No.
No, but, precisely, and that's not me anyway.
Yeah.
But let's say that you, in that context, you'd said, look, I don't want to play anything that involves clans. And I'd said, look, I have the same objection to clans you do. That's kind of the heart and soul of this campaign, is a group that's rejecting everything the clans stand for and is trying to hold on to the old way of the Inner Sphere. I've been GMing for blah, blah number of years.
There is...
You just trust me on this.
No, no, you don't say, just trust me on this.
Why not?
That's not good enough, because I already trust you.
Okay, fair point.
I already trust that you're going to do a good game. We're not trying to make a good game here. We're trying to make the perfect game.
Okay.
So if you would do that to me, it would not be a grand slam. I would not say, I'm on board. Yeah, let's do this. And I'm going to help sway the other players. But you would have my attention. You'd turn my head and I'd be curious. I'd be like, how can we make this better? You know my thing is collaboration, and you know that I trust you already. Mm-hmm. And you would say something like, you don't like all the power creep and stuff. What if we made it a struggle? What if we made it a real struggle? I'm not handing you all the tech and the power for free. Anything you have to earn it, and you're going to pay, and pay dearly for it. Because you know I like the dark and gritty. And that fits in with your theme. And this is just me kind of making assumptions at this point. This fits in with your theme of Silver Scorpions. And look at it this way, Chad. You're not playing the clans. You're hurting them. You're hurting them badly. And on top of that, there's going to be intrigue. Because you know me, and you know these are the things that tweak my interest. If you didn't know me this way, if we weren't 30 years of friendship plus, right, you would be asking me questions. Well, what interests you in this? What are some things that grab you? What are things that you like? What are questions that you have about this campaign? You're not cherry-picking the answers. You're looking at what they are asking. You're looking at the questions. And then you're saying, okay, you like the politics. You like the dark and gritty. You don't like the power creep.
What would be your ideal Battletech game? Have the person explain that. And then kind of look through that. It's like, what of that can I work in on top of what I'm already wanting to do?
And not even adapt the game. What about this game do you like? And then you start selling those aspects of it. This is going to have a dark and gritty thing. There's not going to be a power creep. You aren't only going to be fighting the clans. There are going to be other factions and other things you have to worry about. I know the Silver Scorpions thing, so I can say that. But, yes, you know, there's other things that you have to worry about. And, Chad, let me be honest with you. You're too hung up on that date, on the clan invasion thing. A story is a story is a story. You want role-playing. You want great characters. You want a good story. You know I can deliver a good story. The great characters are up to you guys. So can you give me a great character? And you challenge them to add to it. And we can make this work. Do you think, Chad, that we can wrap all of this up in a package and make this work? Because you know me, and it's just like, okay, well, you're starting to get those wheels turning. You're asking them questions. You're asking them questions on how they would make it work and getting their wheels turning and getting them thinking about your game. And then you get those wheels turning. And here's what you do. Right when you get that look in their eye and their wheels are turning, you know they're thinking about it, you stop talking to them, you turn around to someone else. You take it away and you start talking to Wayne. This is a sales technique. I'm holding John Grana's business card here to give you an example of what we just did, physical example, because this is going to work great on audio-only podcast. So I'm holding John Grana's business card, and this is the imaginary widget, and I'm selling this to you in a store, and I just give you a great pitch, and I hold it out to you, and by social concept, it's just like something's held out to you. You have to take it. You're holding it in your hand. I'm talking about it. You're getting interested in it. And then I grab it and I take it away. That makes you, on a sort of primal level,
want it back. Because I had something and now I don't.
Yes. And I'm not saying that you're a complete bastard about it, but you get the person thinking about it. Then you let them simmer. You let them cook on it. And then you start working on Wayne. And then, you know, and you don't have to do this with each person in your group, because here's the cool thing about selling to a group. You identify who your unwitting salesman will be. You know that I sway a lot of influence in the group in these matters simply because I'm a loud, pushy, steamrollery, sales obnoxious kind of guy. So I can kind of shout it up. I can make it work. I can put fireworks on it and I can make it go woo and wonderful. So you know that if you can get me on board, I might be able to get Pat on board. I might be able to get John on board. I might be able to get Wayne on board. You get me and Wayne on board, we'll do your work for you.
Even if you don't get Chad all the way on board, if you get him not immediately shooting it down. Get him part of that way. He's not poisoning the rest of the group, and it's easier for you to work and get them, and then you can get them to help you with him.
I do know, simply looking at the way that humans interrelate, everybody has opinions, obviously.
Yes.
But the chief difference is there are some people who say, I have an opinion, but I'm not going to fight over it. Mm-hmm. You know, if the group consensus is we're going to go here, I'll deal with it. Where there are other people who will tend to bunker their opinions much more harshly. Mm-hmm. If they are against something, then they are against it.
Yeah.
And certainly there is a virtue in selling those people.
For me, I've honestly never had this problem. I mean, I've been a little bit on the other end where games have been pitched to me, but for me, it's never really been a huge issue where we've really had to fight to try and sell a game. Most of the time, players are pretty amicable to at least giving stuff a little bit of a try, you know, and then backing out if it's not working. However, if I had to, taking my background, my approach to this would be, and this kind of becomes almost an either or kind of thing, this is done this way, would be to do a little prep work beforehand and do something that's kind of mood setting. And now I'm not saying like go out and make a PowerPoint, but it might just be either a short fiction piece or a nice descriptor piece or something that kind of gives everybody something to chew on in regards to what the campaign might be like. More immersive rather than saying you are this and you might be doing this and you would possibly go meet these types of people. Put something in there so they're actually maybe some of those examples of what those might be you actually would be talking about.
Biggest thing for selling a game is to sell the feel. Anything you can do to get over to the other players what that feel is going to be is a good thing.
I consider myself pretty good at pitching a game.
Uh-huh.
But if somebody who is really bad at pitching a game came to the pitch session, so to speak, and they're an artist and they drew out, this is the city you guys are going to be in. This is your spaceship. Oh, yeah. And handed copies of that around. I mean, it doesn't have to be super detailed with 100 characters in it and full color. If they were pitching a space game and they handed me, this is your spaceship, I would have a seriously hard time competing against that.
That was going to be my question, is what if, and I'm pitching this to you guys, Wayne and Chad, and for anyone that's curious, I excluded Johan there because Johan had to excuse himself because a migraine was starting to set in, so he needed to go get treatment for that before it got bad. But what Chris said, well, what if I'd approached it with theatrical? Let's say that I just said, it's my turn to GM. Come next week with an open mind and ready to game. You guys come in.
I would be thinking fangs and...
from me? Have you learned nothing in 32 years?
You have
years?
Never said... Come. You have never said to me, come next week with an open mind.
but the point is, though, that I just said, look, we're going to start gaming next time. Yeah. And I walk in and I put down... I don't know. I go out somewhere, I get patches or pins made, and I put down unit patches, and I put down a stack of mech diagrams, and I put down a map of the inner sphere, and I start off with...
I'm immediately interested before you start talking.
These planets have gone dark.
I'm pitching
dark.
A different game. I've thrown it out the window. Yeah, not because I'm sold, but because I know I can't compete.
These planets have gone dark, and we don't know why.
You just sold me.
And so...
You just sold me right there.
Okay.
Because think of your Silver Scorpions pitch.
Right.
You know, it's just like... It is dictatorial. You will be doing this. You will be doing this. I will be delivering this. I will be giving you this.
Now think about the Stonekeep one. It is a city that's here. Here is what's the surrounding. This is what it looks like.
That is a purchase order. Those are the deliverables that you'll give us, which are great. That's great. Wrong stage. What you just did is you just sold us. Forget the props, forget the patches and all that, although that is a really cool idea.
That could be the same campaign that you did pitch us. I'm interested now.
Your elevator pitch is, I don't even remember what it is. It was like, you know.
Planets are going dark.
These planets.
Yeah, these worlds these are going dark. You need to find out why.
And all of a sudden I'm like, I kind of want to know why. I don't want to be told what I'm going to do. But once you've sold me and we kind of take it to the next level, then you could start saying, edge it in. This is a military game. Wayne doesn't really like military games. I do and I don't. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. Depends on my mood. If there's not very much competition and the premise is good, I think we would go for that.
Oh, yeah.
And so if I'm to take what my issue is, and I realize for people listening, everyone's issues may be a little different. But just
some people might not even have an issue with this.
Yeah, maybe they don't. Maybe they're either a really good salesman or their group is really pliable or who knows what. But it sounds like in my case that I sell it wrong. Mm-hmm. That I come in and I sell too much of the detail, too much of the end product, as opposed to here's why you should be excited about it. I start off with this is where it's going to be. This is what you'll do. I start off by giving you things to object to, as opposed to saying
here's things you should love.
Yeah, I'm trying to sell you a car. And instead of saying this thing goes really fast, well, let's put in a CD and hear how it sounds. I'm just sitting down like, okay, its frame is made out of this, and it's
and it's going to cost you this much and this much operation to run. What was my pitch for? Do you remember what my pitch was for the game with Gnarl in it?
Vaguely.
My pitch was.
I remember vampires.
I remember vampires, which actually we killed
the idea of vampires and became the elders.
The elders. And I adapted the idea. Yeah. Everyone was like, oh, God, vampires sucks. Like, you know what? I agree. Vampires really suck, I guess.
Take out your fangs and cave.
Yeah, just like hide the fangs and stuff.
Let's go to not Denny's.
Yeah. And in that example, obviously, I'm very amicable to adapting my idea. But my pitch was basically like, I was talking to Wayne, and Wayne had this idea for a character, and it was about a traveling bard. And we got into this discussion, this back and forth of what would it be like in a world that really is D&D, that had giant spiders roaming around the countryside, eating people. What would that world be like?
Actually, Carl and I have had the same conversation about Final Fantasy. You walk out your door and random encounter monsters.
Yeah, and there's this giant two-story tall, spider or whatever. And it's just like, what would that world be like? And then I start talking about roads and like your armies. Armies wouldn't fight battles. They would just be protecting people all the time.
Yeah.
And from there, I kind of pitched it. But it was that concept. I mean, that was the elevator pitch. That's another thing is that you really have to work on, not you, I mean, just the general you.
Right, the generic you.
The generic you has to work on an elevator pitch. Because at the beginning of most pitch sessions, you're throwing out ideas. It's like, well, I've got this fantasy Wild West involving a lot of undead. And I've got a sci-fi game that's sort of like Cowboy Bebop, takes place in the solar system. And we can't go to Earth. We don't have colonial planets, but we have space stations around all the planets and that sort of thing. And there's a lot of crime and there's a lot of localized government. There isn't an overall government, so lots of anarchy. And then I've got a sort of modern day urban fantasy. So you guys pick the city. This is kind of what this is our Dresden game. You guys pick the city. We make the city and we play a bunch of bumbling friends who get in way over our heads. I think the elevator pitch is important, but I think that we really hit on something of be conceptual, both in the pitch and in the sale. Don't be dictatorial. Don't say you will be playing bumbling kids in an urban fantasy and you will be playing in Philadelphia.
It almost sounds like, especially for someone like me, where the narrative is more important than the concept, there's a bit of, I don't quite call it bait and switch, but I have to find something to latch onto, sell you that, and then be like, okay, and it's going to happen in Stonekeep.
Yes, exactly.
So I think, okay, I think I've kind of had that aha moment where I realize what I need to change is not my standards, but
I
introduce the idea.
Never get rid of your standards.
Because if you do, you won't be happy.
Yeah, I
won't enjoy the game.
That's the most important thing. You know, we talked about earlier about like adapting the idea to the player and stuff. I can do that. Well, I don't know why I can do that, but I can do
it. There's one reason the Skies of Glass game that I ran several campaigns back,
which was awesome,
worked so much better than the Epoch game or the BattleTech game or anything I ran thereafter, which is by pure coincidence what I wanted to run and what you guys wanted to play lined up. And so there really wasn't a sales pitch because I came to you with the product you already wanted anyway by pure coincidence.
Right. And, you know, as someone who sells games, as a game master, if I was the only game master in the group, I would not feel that it would be fair to my players if I didn't pitch them games. Like, okay, we just ended this campaign. I'm the only game master. I come to you guys, and I do an elevator pitch for three games.
That was what I was going to say, too. Three's a good number.
If I'm giving you one, it's like, we are playing this one game, but it's a great elevator pitch. I'm not dictating, and I do a good pitch for it. I do a good sale for it. But I'm putting only one game on the table. I don't feel like I'm giving you guys choice. Is it unfair? No. I'm the only game master, and this is the game I want to run, but I really, just as a person, feel that as a game master, I need to give options to people.
I agree with you.
And so it's like, I'm comfortable with Weird West, and I'm comfortable with this near future space thing, and I'm comfortable with ancient fantasy that's low fantasy. So out of these, what do you want? And then to me, the pitch starts, because for me, salesmanship is not me manipulating you or the group or individuals to get the individuals to manipulate the group into getting what I want. For me, I get super excited about ideas. I really love my friends, and I really want them to get super excited about these ideas too, because these ideas are so cool. And they're just not at the same place I am with the idea yet. So I got to loop back and I got to sell them the idea
right.
to get them super excited about it. And when everybody's super excited about an idea, then I'm really happy.
Chad, I love your idea of attempting these on the air, or weighing your idea as well, but attempting these on the air to see how they go. So here's what we're going to do. Johan, obviously.
We're going to play the game where the solar systems go dark, right?
Yes.
It's an AP.
So
awesome. So that is awesome.
For next...
I don't want to compete with that.
So for next time, obviously, Johan won't be here just because of travel distance and things mm-hmm. like that. But whoever's on the mics, we are each going to bring a game idea that we are going to try and sell.
Oh, my God.
Dan, do us a favor and don't pitch that one because we can't beat it.
I've got a different one.
Oh, my God. The systems are going dark because of Julia the Necrolord. Holy crap!
I do have a different game idea for actually a game I don't think any of you are even familiar with in the least. It's another homebrew that I don't think anyone currently affiliated with the show,
even
I don't think
moi?
Yeah, has ever heard of.
Wow.
And so
wow.
I will
interesting
pitch this next time, and anyone who's here will have to pitch an idea as well.
Yep.
And we will do that for as long as it takes on the show. So consider this a possible two-parter. We'll see how long that goes in the next one.
I will also offer an additional challenge. If somebody sends me an elevator pitch...
You will try and pitch their game?
I will pitch your game. Send it to chad@feartheboot.com. You send me your pitch.
Really are the laziest GM ever.
I am,
no,
right?
Actually, in a way, I think it's a challenge. Yeah. You have to pitch somebody else's idea.
And you know, it could be like
harder in selling.
It could be totally ridiculous
but
comedy, or it could be totally serious.
But here's what I want to
give
get
me your
out
idea,
of that.
And I'll pitch your idea.
Here's what I want to get out of that. I want to get not a critique of the game, but a critique of the pitch.
Yes.
So there's your homework for next time. You guys at home, as always, thank you for tuning in. Have a great week and great games. And next week, we're going to come back. We're going to try and pitch ideas to each other and grade the pitches to see how they go.
And I want you guys to grade our pitches, too. So, how do we do?
Hey, hell, maybe we'll put up a poll and say if this was real. Well, if you were here, which game would you play in? And just for fun, and see which one wins out.
I like it.
It's going to be good.
It will be good. So thank you for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2012. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.